I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, another installment of Smart Nutrition. The nutrition diva, Monica Reinagle, assesses the Whole 30 Challenge. For 30 days, folks are encouraged to cut out the usuals like junk food and sugar, but people are also told to stop eating some stuff that's considered pretty good for you, like dairy, beans, and whole grains. The creators of the program say it's not a diet, but a way to jumpstart a more nutritious lifestyle. So does it work? And more importantly, is it healthy? Monica Reinagle weighs in on that and answers all of your nutrition questions. Then we'll ease on down the road for a preview of Morgan State University's upcoming production of The Wiz. Dr. Eric Conway, the conductor of the famed Morgan State Choir and director of the Morgan Fine Arts Department, joins me. Midday is coming right up after the news. And welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you're tuning in with us this afternoon. There is a whole lot going on today and all this week in Washington, Annapolis, and at Baltimore City Hall. A couple of hours ago, the House Intelligence Committee began hearings into the nature of Russian interference in the 2016 election and President Trump's allegation that President Obama wiretapped him at Trump Tower late last year. FBI Director James Comey and Admiral Michael Rogers, the director of the National Security Agency, are testifying in this somewhat rare public session. As NPR has reported already, the headline so far, Director James Comey has confirmed that the FBI is investigating Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election and that they're looking into whether or not members of the Trump campaign had contact with Moscow. As to President Trump's tweets 2 weeks ago about being wiretapped by President Obama, allegations Mr. Trump continues to insist are true. Mr. Comey said simply, "I have no information that supports those tweets." So no big news there. All things happening as one would expect. Mr. Trump, by the way, has tweeted a lot about all of this early this morning. WYPR is broadcasting the Intelligence Committee hearing on our digital channel, HD3, and online at WYPR.org. Also on the Hill today, about an hour ago, Judge Neil Gorsuch began his confirmation hearing to replace Antonin Scalia on the U.S. Supreme Court. And tomorrow night, WYPR will air a special radio documentary by Gil Sandler about Baltimore during the Depression. Gil will be my guest on Midday tomorrow afternoon, along with Ken Jackson, who hosts In the Mood on WYPR Friday nights, and Fred Rasmussen of the Baltimore Sun. Today is crossover day in the Maryland General Assembly. We'll keep a close eye on what bills are passed in both the House and the Senate today so that they can be sent over to the other body for possible final passage in this session. And tonight at Baltimore City Hall, the City Council is expected to pass a bill raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour by the year 2022. So we're keeping an eye on all of this. We will have more on all of these stories as the week continues. On Wednesday, my guest will be former U.S. Senator Barbara Mikulski. We will most certainly talk about these first few weeks of the Trump administration, and Senator Mikulski will reflect on her record-breaking career in Washington. But now it's time for another installment of Smart Nutrition. The nutrition diva, Monica Reinagle, is here. She's an author and a licensed nutritionist who joins us on Midday every other month and who blogs at nutritionovereasy.com. We'll take your calls, your comments, and your nutrition questions. We're going to talk about a new kind of diet option, lifestyle option that a lot of people are talking about. It's called the Whole 30 Challenge. For 30 days, people are encouraged to cut out junk food, sweets, fried foods, and even things like beans and grains. So the people behind the challenge say it's designed to shake people out of unhealthy eating habits. But the question is, does it live up to the hype? And as always, when it comes to hype living up to, we go right to Monica Reinagle and ask if it does, in fact, do that. How are you doing?
Hi, Tom. Nice to see you.
So this Whole 30 challenge, this is a husband and wife nutrition team, I guess?
I believe they were husband and wife when they launched the project. I think they are no longer, but they're still business partners in this
business. I wonder if that has anything to do with what they're eating.
She got so cranky from never having been able to have any junk food.
Beans or junk food. So how does this work? I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff you're not allowed to eat for a month.
So this is really kind of, it's been around for a couple of years, but somehow it seems to have gotten a lot of traction in the last year. And I bet almost everybody listening will know at least one person who has at least attempted this from the office, from their family. Maybe they've tried it. And it's a very austere program. And it's not just that you're encouraged to give up these foods. You are required with, you know, it's a zero tolerance policy. If you slip up even a little bit, you have to go back to day one. You get thrown to the, you know, to the front of the line.
Back
again.
To zero.
Right, back to zero. And and it's a very long list of foods that you do not eat. So in addition to some of the things that you might expect, like sugar and artificial sweeteners and alcohol, you also give up all grains, all dairy products, all legumes. So, and the idea, I think there are a couple of different things going on at once. One of the claims for the program is that this is going to help you identify foods that you might be sensitive to by eliminating them from your diet. And then at the end of the 30 days, reintroducing them very intentionally, you might be able to pinpoint some culprits that are causing problems for you that you might not have seen before. And we could talk a little bit about that and whether that sort of elimination diet works.
And I guess that's the only, I guess one of the big ways that people do figure out if they have any food sensitivities is you have to just eliminate it and do it by literally process of elimination. Right?
Yes, this is actually a well-validated technique. And people do use this, you know, physicians and nutrition professionals do use this with their clients to identify food sensitivities. When they do an elimination diet, it looks a little bit different than this one. For one thing, the Whole 30 eliminates a lot of foods that you would not normally eliminate on an elimination diet because they're not very likely to be causing food sensitivities. Mm-hmm. And then there's a handful of things that are almost always included in an elimination diet that are allowed on the Whole 30. So it's a little mismatched. If you happened to be sensitive to dairy or wheat, this would be helpful. But if you were in maybe identifying that, if, however, you are one of the many people that have a sensitivity to eggs or nuts, not going to help you.
Because you're allowed to eat those on this thing.
Right. Yeah. But the elimination diet, just as a concept, is pretty well validated. And the idea is you take these foods completely out of your diet for a period of time. Usually it doesn't take 30 days. It usually only takes about 3 weeks. And then you introduce...
But they're saying you should
do 30 days. Because, like I said, I think there's a couple of different things going on here. But in an elimination diet, the next step is then you reintroduce those eliminated foods one by one, very carefully at a distance of, you know, 2 or 3 days, and you monitor really carefully to see if you notice an adverse reaction. And that's your clue. So if when you reintroduce that food, you don't really notice any change, then that would suggest, oh, that wasn't something that was causing problems for you. So there's that. So some people are attracted to the Whole 30 because they think they might have a food sensitivity and that this might help them identify it. And if they can get through the whole protocol, they may identify it. I see on the group's forum that a lot of people go through the whole thing, the whole 30 days, the whole reintroduction, and they're like, yep, and I wasn't sensitive to anything.
So. Yeah, because it's called the Whole 30 Challenge, and boy, it is a challenge, isn't it? I mean, there's just so much. I mean, it's a challenge just to figure out what to eat.
Yes, it requires an enormous amount of support, and so the people go into these support forums and they try to get themselves through this. But there's another aspect to this, and it doesn't have to do with food sensitivities. I think it has more to do with disrupting your dietary pattern. And I would have to say that this would be an extremely disruptive thing. And maybe that could be a good thing. If you've really gotten into some ruts, some bad eating habits that you cannot seem to break, for some people, this kind of cold turkey, you know, polar bear plunge kind of, you know, project can create enough of a disruption that it can kind of break some cycles and give them the opportunity for a fresh start. That's really a whole different thing than trying to eliminate food sensitivity. So I think eliminating alcohol and sugar and junk foods and fried foods and all of that category is really designed to try to do this sort of nutritional reset aspect of the program.
And the idea is you've got to go without that stuff for a fairly extended period of time. In other words, if you give up alcohol and junk food for 4 days, that's not really going to do it for you. It's not going to reset your metabolism. It's not going to reset your instincts and your impulses when you go to make yourself dinner. I mean, you got to do it for 4 weeks, not just 4 days.
Right. I'm not sure it's so much about resetting metabolism as developing new habits. You know, if you give up something for 4 days, you're not forced to figure out what you're going to replace that habit with, because it's a short period of time. But in 30 days, you're going to have to come up with something else to do between 5 and 7 besides have 2 cocktails, or something, you know, else to put in your lunch besides a sandwich, you know, if you're trying to cut down on the amount of bread you're eating. So a lot of it has to do with doing it for long enough that you're forced to come up with new behaviors and new habits to replace those. So this diet has now gotten enough traction that it actually made the list of diets reviewed by the U.S. News and World Report this year. They do an annual ranking of diets where they rank. They have a bunch of experts and they rank all the popular diets, you know, from 1 to, in this case, 38.
South Beach, Scarsdale,
right,
blah,
Ducan,
blah, blah.
Weight Watchers, everybody.
Right. However, it made the list.
The good news is it made the list. The bad news, it ranked 38 out of 38. So the experts are not convinced that this is a viable or balanced approach. I'm not convinced that it's a sustainable approach. And so, you know, let's say you do go 30 days, you give up all of these foods. What happens on day 31? You know, do you go from nothing to all? You know, do you then somehow find a way to enjoy those things in moderation? You know, what's the off ramp for this?
Because you could see the impulse to just go out for a beer and
everything.
Pizza party,
right.
You know, right? I mean, but you know, they talk about mindful reintroduction, of these foods. So I guess you have like one slice of pizza or something and decide, you know, that you're not.
Do you think you would?
Sensitive? No. I mean, it was 30 days would be impossible.
Right?
Absolutely. Not for me. I would love to hear from some listeners who have tried this, and from anybody who has any questions for our nutrition diva, Monica Reinagle, about the Whole 30 challenge. 410-662-8780 is our number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, if you want to drop us a tweet, @MiddayTomHall. The other thing about this, Monica, is that it's not really a diet, in quotes. I mean, the perpetrators of this, whatever, the authors of this, I'm not sure how I should refer to them, Mr. and Mrs. Hartwig, they say stay off the scales for the month. Don't monitor your body fat, your body weight. Don't think of it as a diet, although I would imagine that most folks couldn't help but lose some weight if they had previously been, you know, consuming fair amounts, even moderate amounts of sugar and junk food and alcohol and all that.
Yeah, they really don't want you to look at this as a weight loss strategy, but you're right. It's almost inevitable that people lose weight on this program by virtue of the fact that it is very restrictive. When you eliminate whole categories of foods from your diet, generally your calorie consumption goes way down and you do lose weight. But they try to, you know, not to promote it as a weight loss regimen. You know, what they promote and how people use the program may not always be in perfect alignment. So in my online community of people that follow my nutrition writing and participate like on my Facebook page, what I see from them is that people tend to do this. They cycle on and off. They'll do a Whole 30 starting January 1 to kind of make up for all of their indulgence over the holidays, or they'll do a Whole 30 in May to get ready for bathing suit season. So they are actually using it as a, you know, either a quick weight loss or, even more troubling to me, as a sort of nutritional penance. You know, so I was really bad.
Yeah, you're real contrite, so, like after the holidays.
Right.
Or something.
And so now I'm going to be really good and I'll undo that damage. And for me, what this sets up is a little bit of almost a binge and purge mentality, because once you've made that bargain once, you know, and said like, OK, I'm just going to let this all go and then I'm going to do a Whole 30 and make up for it. how much easier is it for you the next time you're in a situation trying to decide, you know, should I moderate here? You're going to say, I really shouldn't do this.
Just cash in some chips and then I can just pick them up
later.
And
I'll just pay for this later. And I'm not sure that that sort of oscillation between, you know, extreme indulgence and then extreme austerity really adds up to a very healthier, balanced approach,
yes,
not surprisingly.
As right. I always say, when I'm bad, I'm really, really bad. But when I'm good, I'm never
not
good
that
enough.
Good, right?
We have Michelle in Baltimore on the line. Michelle, welcome to Midday. I guess you've tried this once or twice, huh?
I have. I've actually done the Whole 30 twice, and both times I did it for over 90 days.
90 days. Good for you. Boy, the discipline of that is impressive.
So, Michelle, what was your main motivation in trying it in the first place? Were you trying to identify food sensitivities?
Well, you know, I worked in the weight loss industry for over 15 years, and I have struggled personally with my weight for almost 40 years. And I was using it more to identify very clearly what my personal trigger foods are, but also to help me figure out, you know, how do I feel physically and mentally based on what I eat? You know, when, and I did a lot of research, and I ordered the Whole 30 book. I read it before I started anything. And, you know, the Harwig's take on it is it's really not designed for weight loss. People lose weight on the Whole 30, which is why a lot of people end up doing it. But it really is designed, number one, to help you eliminate common foods that cause inflammation, and then to, as you mentioned, reset kind of your own personal experience with food. There is a complete reintroduction section in the book, and, you know, my personal experience has been whether I'm counseling people on their weight loss or with my own weight loss is, you know, what are you going to do at the end? You know, you mentioned what happens on day 31. Well, if you go back to eating the way you used to eat, then you're going to look and feel the way you used to look and feel. But that's not only true with Whole 30. That's true with everything else.
Did it work for you?
Well,
I mean, did you find on day 31 that you really had accomplished a reset of your prior habits?
Or day 91? I guess you did it
for
91, longer than 30
yeah.
days, right?
I did. And both times I did it over the holidays. I started both times in December. Well, one time I started the week before Thanksgiving. And this past year I started on December 31st and went through the holidays. And I did find that, you know, I did reset. You know, I look at food differently. I was amazed at how much sugar is in our diet. You know, I mean, I knew that, but I really know now. Trying to find a lunch meat that doesn't have sugar in it is really crazy. And
yeah, this will make you a super smart shopper, won't it? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I always read labels, but I really read labels now, and I'm very particular about what I purchase because, for me, it is sugar. You know, sugar
yeah, that's great.
Is sugar and bread are a couple of those things that, you know, I mean, I can make toast a whole meal all day long.
Sure. Well, that's great. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for the call. We do have a couple other folks on the line that we're going to get to after a break who've tried it. One woman, Rachel, is calling from Baltimore who has done it evidently for almost a year. So we've got 90 days and we've got a year. This is terrific. I really want to hear their stories, and we will come back to that after we take a little break. By the way, today is the vernal equinox, the first official day of spring, in addition to all the news that today brings. And as well, we are at T-minus 2 weeks and counting for opening day of the Baltimore Orioles 2017 season. And as a special bonus at no extra charge, it's Smart Nutrition here on Midday with the nutrition diva, Monica Reinagle. If you go to her website, you can sign up for Monica's newsletter and get her nutrition news and tips by email. You can also email or tweet or call her today. 410-662-8780 is the number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Stick around. We'll be right back. little Pass the Peas here on Midday. Welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. By the way, coming up a little later today, Eric Conway, the director of the famed Morgan State University's choir, will join me for a preview of an upcoming production of the musical The Wiz at Morgan State. If you're just joining us today, we're talking smart nutrition with our resident nutrition diva, Monica Reinagle. Monica is a licensed nutritionist who blogs at nutritionovereasy.com. You can join our conversation about the Whole 30 Challenge, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. So lots of folks getting in touch with us here, Monica. Here's Christine in Towson. And she says, can Monica tell us how a vegetarian who doesn't really like eggs or mushrooms could do the Whole 30 challenge? And do you have any other tips on what you can eat? Vegetarians actually have a problem with this, yeah, this little program, don't they?
Yeah. The party line here is that you can't do the Whole 30 as a vegetarian because the philosophy behind this program is that animal foods and meat in particular are going to be a central source of nutrition in this, that they are, the founders say that they believe that that meat is necessary for, you know, a healthy human diet. And so there really is no official vegetarian version of the Whole 30. And that's an objection that a lot of people raise. And I'll just say, I do not agree that that you cannot have a healthy diet without animal protein in it. I think that vegetarianism is a perfectly valid choice for all kinds of reasons. And that no one should feel that they have to eat meat in order to be healthy. But Christine, I would say it's certainly possible to borrow some aspects of this if you wanted to challenge yourself, for example, to eliminate added sugars and artificial sweeteners or alcohol or, you know, whatever else, to see if that you felt better or if these foods were, as our previous caller was saying, trigger foods that tended to lead you to overeat. That's certainly something that you could do. So I don't think that we have to be dogmatic about this. You may not feel completely comfortable in the Whole 30 community, the official Whole 30 community, but there's certainly ways to borrow some of these techniques in maybe a less restrictive way, which I actually think might be a little bit more useful.
Yeah, it could be more sustainable. But, you know, that is a tough thing, especially if you're an eater like Christine who doesn't like eggs and mushrooms. I mean, the things you can eat are awfully limited. I mean, they say, for example, no grains. So, you know, wheat, rye, barley, oats, corn, rice, etc. No legumes.
Right.
So that means, you know, black beans, red beans, pinto beans, navy beans, white beans. And a lot of folks, and we have a email here from Sherry in Baltimore, who says that this diet has a lot of restrictions. Beans are usually recommended because they have fiber and they help crave hunger for a long period of time. So what if you're a type 1 or 2 diabetic? That might be another red flag.
Right. Well, for vegetarians, especially vegetarians who don't eat dairy and don't eat eggs, legumes are going to be one of their, and whole grains are going to be one of their primary sources of protein. So yes, eliminating those foods on top of the other foods that you're not eating would leave a diet so restrictive it would be hard to meet your nutritional needs. And I don't think anybody benefits there. In terms of diabetes, the Whole 30, as designed, is a lower carb approach. Because you've eliminated grains and sugar, you're getting most of your calories from protein and, you know, vegetables and healthy sources of fat. So it actually would not be a bad approach for somebody who's managing blood sugar issues. I'm not sure it's the best approach, but it could be an approach. But that was one of the main criticisms that the experts that reviewed all the diets for the U.S. News and World Report had, was too many groups of healthy foods have been eliminated from this diet, you know, and we want
to... It's one thing to eliminate junk food and sugar, but
exactly.
It's a whole other thing to not eat kidney beans. Yeah.
Right.
That's quite something. Rachel in Baltimore, welcome to Midday. You're on with the nutrition diva, Monica Reinagle.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
So I have been basically on this diet for about a year. I'm in the process of adding foods back into my diet, and started the diet primarily for elimination purposes.
And what have you learned? Have you been able to identify things now that you're reintroducing? Have you been able to identify things that you're sensitive to?
Yeah, absolutely. I've realized that I cannot do any breads, gluten of any sort. I think that's primarily the big one. I've started, as part of the reintroduction, adding some grains back in. So when I actually did the diet, I eliminated all legumes, grains, and nuts. And when I started adding them back in, I started doing sprouted versions of those. So it's the sprouted version digests differently. Mm-hmm.
And Rachel, could I ask, why is it that you decided to do this for, you know, basically 11 more months than the inventors of this program suggest?
Mainly because I was having success with it, and I was able to figure out a way to, you know, cook and eat on a regular basis without adding things back in. So I was more nervous about adding things back in than anything.
Yes, fear, the great motivator. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, it helps if you have a community or a social circle of other people that are doing it, because one thing that people struggle with on the Whole30 is it can be very isolating. It's really hard to eat out in restaurants. It's hard to go to anybody's house for dinner unless you're going to bring your own meal. You know, it can even be hard to entertain, because then you kind of have to put everybody else on and your diet. So that's not an insurmountable challenge, but especially for people who are doing this for a long term, it's something that you have to cope with, is how do you participate in your social life, you know, when you have all these food restrictions, because so much of our socialization is organized, for better or for worse, around food.
Sure. Well, Rachel, thank you so much, and best of luck with it as you continue. Amanda in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Monica Reinagle.
Hello.
Hi.
My husband and I started on January the 11th of last year, and we stayed on it for 3 months, and we went to a wedding. And at this point, we had reintroduced an occasional glass of wine at dinner, but both of us had agreed that we did not miss bagels, cream cheese, ice cream, milk. We went from dairy milk, skim milk, to almond milk. We never were real big bean eaters. We did eat hummus. But after being on it for 3 months, we realized we didn't miss any of it. And we went to a wedding, and it was a huge, wonderful spread. And we just went down the aisle, and if it was sitting on a crust, you know, a piece of bread, we just didn't eat it.
Mm-hmm. Give me an idea of dinner at your house when you were on this
dinner
thing.
At my house, and we're still on this. A year and a half later.
So what's the menu tonight, for example?
The menu tonight is chicken legs cooked in the toaster oven with a rub on it, fresh broccoli, acorn squash cut in half, and it's seasoned with either a coconut oil spread or clarified ghee. But we use very little oil.
That sounds delicious. What time is dinner?
Whenever my husband gets home, but you're more than welcome to come by. Yeah. I mean, I bought the cookbook, but I am just cooking up a storm. And we're having our meals have probably 25% is meat. We have either chicken, salmon, or something like scallops in the skillet, bit of ghee.
And you haven't found it hard to sustain this week after week after week?
No, we went. Now, Saturday was St. Patrick's Day, and we went down and got a pizza. We said, what the heck? We haven't had a pizza in a year and a half, and we got one. We both had two slices of it, and we said, you know, I'm done if I never see another piece of pizza.
Well, there you go. Well, thank you for your call, Amanda. I must say you sent a shockwave through our director and engineer, Luke Spicknall. The thought of a pizza, of being pizzaless for a year and a half was, he's now supine.
Or a day and a half.
He's now supine on the floor, and Bridget Armstrong, our producer, is trying to revive him. We'll work on that. Victoria. Victoria in Pawpaw, West Virginia. You've been on this for almost 2 years. Welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't know this was a thing.
Yeah, evidently it is. Yeah. I didn't know it was a thing before this morning either.
I happened on it because I've had, all my life I had a problem with my digestion. I had my first complete upper GI in my early 20s. I'm 70 now. And then when I had a disease that's supposed to kill you called scleroderma, and I recovered from it, but it too affected my digestive tract. So I've had to experiment and play with food for a long time. And I began realizing as I got older that, of course, you get older, things start slowing down a little more. And I thought, you know, this is not perfect. I would like to have perfect digestion, which I've never had in my life. And I do now, and it's awesome. And the only difference between my diet, which I've been on for over 2 years, is that I do eat the occasional bean. I don't eat a lot of beans, but I do. Mostly, my diet's very similar to the one just described. A lot of meat, a lot of fish.
And you certainly sound hale and hearty, and it sounds like you're in pretty good health, particularly if you've survived a very serious condition.
You know, I think, Tom, when people try an approach like this because they have a specific complaint and they get relief from a longstanding set of symptoms that they find intolerable, that becomes a very powerful incentive or motivation to continue. Maybe they experiment to see if there's one or two things that they can add back without harmful effect. But I think that that's, of course, if you are feeling that much better, why wouldn't you continue? The question is, what if you're not really feeling that much better? You know, if it doesn't solve a problem, is there enough reason, you know, to continue with that restrictive a diet? Is it justified?
And Victoria, I mean, were you able then to identify specifically what it was that was causing your digestive problems? I mean, are you certain now, you know, about what the no-nos in your life need to be?
Well, certainly, I think the top one that I noticed, the biggest difference from when I dropped it was gluten. And grains. I eat no grains at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the biggest difference. On other fronts, I find that I am rather sensitive to sugar, and I don't have any sugar. I won't eat anything with sugar. I haven't had dairy products since the original gastrointestinal incident back in my 20s.
Good for you. Well, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And give our regards to the folks in Paw Paw, West Virginia. It's delightful to hear from you. Dee on the line from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday with our nutrition diva, Monica Reinagle.
Hey, thanks, Tom. And hi, Monica.
Hi.
I know you guys have limited time, so I'm just going to get to the point. I've been doing a similar diet now for about 2.5 months. And I'm also in a weight loss competition that ends in 2 weeks. And so what I usually do is I eat just vegetables for lunch, and then for dinner I'll add like meat or something like that to it. But the goal is basically just to lose about 10 more pounds in 2 weeks. And I actually think I can do it. I just wanted to know if you had any tips, suggestions, anything like that.
Wow, 10 pounds in 2 weeks. You're losing 5 pounds a week, something like that? That's a lot.
I've lost already 32 pounds in 2.5 months.
Good for you. That's terrific. Well, Monica, I mean, generally speaking, this isn't recommended as a long-term strategy, right? As a matter of fact, it's interesting the calls that we're getting, because a big criticism of this program is that it's just simply not sustainable. Yet we're hearing from people who said, well, I didn't do 30 days. I did 90 days. I did a year. I did 2 years. I mean, they're having no trouble sustaining it for reasons that you've mentioned about the obvious benefit that they're getting. Here's a guy who's done great when it comes to weight loss. 32 pounds is a terrific, terrific achievement, and he's still going strong.
Right. You're right. This isn't actually how we generally recommend that people lose weight, and yet this is what's being modeled on. You know, a lot of these weight loss competitions are sponsored by employers. You know, they think, our workforce is overweight. Let's sponsor a competition and give a big prize, and whoever loses the most weight or whatever team or department can lose the most collective weight, we'll send them all on a cruise or whatever. And employers feel like they will benefit if they can get their workforce, their employee population, to be healthier and to lose weight. Unfortunately, the competition sort of propels people towards losing weight as quickly as possible in order to win that competition. And I always kind of cringe a little bit when I hear that, because although it's great to go ahead and lose that weight, losing it very quickly can really set up some long-term metabolic consequences.
Yeah, we've talked about that NBC program, The Biggest Loser.
Right.
And the fact that so many of those people who lose, you know, sometimes in excess of 100 and something pounds.
Sure, very quickly.
In a fairly short period of time. 2 years later, 3 years later, they regained all they lost plus more. So that can be a problem. But, I mean, it sounds like Dee from Baltimore here, I mean, you're at a 32-pound weight loss, you got to be winning that competition hands down, I would imagine.
Well, I'm actually in second place, and I realize it's a lot of weight quickly, and I plan to, you know, kind of moderate that more after it's over. But, yeah, I mean, I feel great, and, you know, I feel better than ever, and it's going well.
Yeah, well, just take a lot of pictures of yourself. You know, it's good to make sure that you can remember these halcyon days. Well, thanks for the call. I really appreciate it. Monica, what the notion that you can retrain, is there any validity to the notion that you could literally retrain your metabolism? I mean, there's one thing about retraining your impulses, your desire. You could, you know, if you quit smoking, you could eventually, you know, stop having a craving for nicotine, right? You quit drinking, you can stop having a craving for alcohol, sort of mental craving. But is there something physiologically that can happen if you reset what you're consuming in this kind of dramatic way?
Well, certainly if you have a dramatic change in your diet, you can reset things like your response to blood sugar or your response to the sugar in food. It can affect your insulin responses and that kind of thing. And that can have a direct impact on your risk for diabetes and heart disease. So that's one aspect of metabolism that can respond pretty profoundly to changes in diet. I think the one that I see the most frequently is one that we don't want to see, and that is by having a dramatic restriction in calories, you retrain your metabolism to need fewer calories, and you actually can cause your metabolism to reset at a slower rate. And that is something that we see very frequently with people that lose weight quickly as they reset their metabolism mm-hmm. in a way that means that they have to then eat less just to maintain,
right.
You know, so that's one reset course, that we don't want
to
see.
No one has thought to mention, it's not to say they're not doing it, but no one has thought to mention so far that they're exercising in any new way, you know, that perhaps they're increasing their activity and their movement during the day. Let's try to sneak in just a couple more callers. Karen in Columbia, welcome to Midday with Monica Reinagle.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great, thanks.
Okay, I started the Whole 30, and I did it for a month in July because my son and I, who's 13, we've had digestive issues, and I was suspecting it was a gluten problem, and I'm a type 2 diabetic, and he has eczema. And I convinced him with a bribe at the end, you know, that he would get something wonderful. And he always suffered with eczema and on his arms and elbows and knees. And once we started, in about 15 days, everything cleared up. And I had just had a doctor's visit the month before, and then I went back for a follow-up. And I tell you that, surprisingly, my A1C went down a point and a half. So it was really surprising. And, you know, we followed it for a month to the letter. And then we kind of tapered off and changed up a few things. Now we know the no-nos. I have a typical Caribbean diet, but I don't eat a lot of beans. I will eat some, like bananas and plantains and things like that, because those are gluten-free. And I don't eat a lot of rice, and I don't incorporate too many grains in my diet.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you had great results with that, Karen. Thank you for the call. So, Monica, we're out of time here. Got to finish up. Any final thought about, you know, the stories that you're hearing this afternoon? It's interesting.
I do think that people that have unexplained digestive difficulties may get some insight from this program or any sort of organized elimination diet. Getting relief from longstanding symptoms is really a wonderful thing. Those who are using it to kind of punish themselves for, you know, for overindulgence, I think they're probably getting a little bit less out of the program.
And we've talked before about how it's nice to do this kind of thing with a group. So we have the caller doing it with folks at work.
Yeah.
We have this mother doing it with her son. We've mm-hmm. got other people doing it, you know, with their husband and their family. So, all right. Well, Monica, always good to see you. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time.
Great to be here.
Monica Reinagle is the Nutrition Diva. She's a licensed nutritionist who blogs at nutritionovereasy.com. If you go to her website, you can sign up for Monica's Radio's newsletter and get her nutrition news and tips by email, come to wypr.org/midday for that link. Coming up after the break, I'll speak with Dr. Eric Conway, the director of the Morgan State University Choir, about a new production of The Wiz over at Morgan State. And before we take that break, on Mondays here on Midday, we read the names of the people who have been victims of homicides in Baltimore City. So far in 2017, 71 people in our city have lost their lives to violence. 8 people were the victims of homicide in Baltimore last week. 1 woman and 2 men were killed. Their names and ages have not yet been released. Here are the names of those who died, whose names and ages have been made public. William Lassane, age 33. Andrew Jackson, age 30. Montel Pridgett, age 24. Markel Scott, age 19. And Davon Fair, he was 24 years old. You're listening to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.